everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the Herman Miller head.
I'm excited to find out what that means. Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games where we discuss our favorite hobby, share our thoughts with you, and even play some games sometimes. Miller, what are we talking about this time?
Today we're going to be talking about RPG ergonomics, how to make your games feel like you're sitting in a Herman Miller ergonomic gaming chair.
Okay. I don't know the reference. I thought you were going to be a lumbar thing, and I guess you were, kind of.
Yeah, it's a big chair brand.
Yeah.
If you're into sort of chairs. Anywho.
Yeah, I've always just bought the cheap one, but yeah. Okay, so yeah, ergonomics. We're specifically talking about the idea of ergonomics in pen and paper, tabletop, RPG, game design. And ergonomics in game design is a thing that already kind of exists. I don't know if people use that language for it very often. But I always thought, like, it was an ergonomic thing in the, like, in the late 2000s when, like, they kind of standardized the control scheme for a first-person shooter where, you know, like, all the buttons did the same thing no matter what, mostly, no matter what shooter you were playing. You know, they put, like, grenades and equipment on the bumpers. The trigger aims in and the other trigger shoots and the sticks and the jump button, like, it's usually the same thing. And there's ergonomics to that because they found, like, the best way where your fingers want to land, and then they also kind of standardized it so that
you didn't have to relearn a control scheme every time, right? So, yeah. For those of you without your thesaurus at home, it's all, ergonomics is all about, like, efficiency and comfort.
And it, generally it applies to, like, physical, you know, physical support and like comfortability, chairs that, you know, won't wreck your back if you work the office job for 20 years or whatever, stuff like that. But, and we are going to be talking about some physical aspects to it, but we're also talking about the, like, conceptual design aspects and what is ergonomic.
Well, the same way that you don't want to, you know, put undue stress, right? If you're sitting in the same chair for 8 hours a day, you want support and good lumbar support. And,
right.
You know, your arms are supported so they're not doing weird stuff.
Yeah.
Your
brain needs lumbar support,
yeah,
too.
Take that and apply it to, you know, your mental calculations.
Yeah, because your brain is the computer that runs these simulations that we play. The points that we are going to hit over the course of this, we're going to talk about layout and design, like in the books, in the, you know, the material, the printed material or the digital material that you use. We're going to talk about the actual game mechanics, ergonomics or lack of ergonomics in game mechanics. Then we're the side of it that is player facing. I'm a little mumbly. This evening. I'll get there. And then we're going to talk about striking a balance, because ergonomic on its own doesn't necessarily mean that it's good or that it even necessarily works. Just because it's easy could still be bad. So, layout and design in the rules, how you present the rules.
Yes. So, the way that rules are presented, not the actual rules themselves. Those are mechanics.
That's mechanics. We'll
talk
get to
about
that
next.
Yeah.
But for example, you got a rule book, right? That's great. I'm sure there's, you know, a bunch of style choices that go into making a book. We know that because we've made a book. So you want it to be easy to read, right? And make sense and be easy to navigate.
Yeah. And there's some things, I guess, before we even get into these sub-bullets, like, the font should be fucking readable, you know? Like, you shouldn't put, like, blue font on green background no contrast.
Well, I mean, here we are in the poor, this is a example of poor ergonomics, is like, it's unreadable, right?
Yeah.
Or like the art goes over the text and it's hard to parse. Or like, you know, some text is really tiny because there's a grand picture. It's like, okay, that's a cool picture.
But this is the part that you need. Or like a cool font for like section headers, great. But you probably don't want to read a whole book in like a font that is, you know, medieval calligraphy script. That'd be obnoxious. Choose a font that is easy on the eyes, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is an example of ergonomics in the presentation of the game. Both good and bad, I guess.
Right, because there will be big, thick paragraphs that you have to read.
Probably.
And they need to be easy to read. Like, if you have to, you know, sound out and guess because you're not so good at reading the cursive, you know, that makes it hard. That would be, you know, a strain, an unergonomic presentation.
Right. Another one we have here. So, rule books we're talking about. Multiple rule books. Sometimes it's necessary. Sometimes it makes a lot of sense to break a game up into, you know, what is player facing? What is game master facing? Monsters, or like dungeon or environmental elements, stuff like that. But, you know, our favorite punching bag here is 5e, and
right, it requires like, 3 books minimum.
$50 books,
3 of them, right? Because you got to get the game master guide, then you got to get the player guide, then you got to get the monster manual. And you don't need the monster manual,
no,
because the game master book does have some monsters.
Yeah, it has, and you know, the internet has stuff, or like if you have a module that you're running, it should have the stuff that you're going to fight in the adventure scene that you're using. But, you know, if you want all of them to build your own stuff, that's a whole other separate book. And technically, you only need one copy of each one, but I think that's another example of poor ergonomics.
Because then there'd be a lot of transcription. You're going to be writing things out, right, from the book onto your sheet. So, like, I think, you know, a module like zine is a perfect example of, like, good ergonomics.
Yeah, better ergonomic
right, where it has
compilation of information.
This monster appears out of the bushes, and then it's got the monster right there,
right,
ready to read.
A little bit of narration. Here's the scene. Maybe an image of, like, this is what the battle map should look like, so that you could sketch it on the table, or if you're using, you know, terrain, you can recreate it easily. And then, yeah, the appropriate numbers that you need to run that monster. All in the, you know, all in the same place where you would need it. Another thing, $50 for the player handbook. What if you're running a game, which seems crazy to me, but all the, like, you know, shows and stuff have like 6 players in them? That's a lot. They're going to be passing that around every time one of them needs to
look at
weapons
or whatever, what have you.
So all of the information for everybody being in one book that then has to be like shared and passed around. Before you even like get to how easy is it for me to open this book, read it, and find what I need. That's an ergonomics challenge that, you know, I would say 5e hasn't really bothered with. I never felt like the primary material for that game was accessible, even with the books in our hands, you know? Like, where is the thing that I need? Well, I'm not sure what I even need.
All right, like, you have to meticulously go through each book and, like, you know, sticky note tab or, like, write down reference pages or whatever to have any sort of ergonomic flow when you're actually running the game.
Yeah.
'Cause that's what happens when you have, and, like, we're talking about this at the very end. You know, there's a balance there. When you have a super complex game, obviously you're going to need a lot of pages.
Yeah, you're going to need more pages of more reference and more information.
But what we have kind of gravitated towards when we design a game, and just like the games that we think
that we pick
do
up
a good,
like,
you know, ergonomic presentation, are like, they have the player information and the game master information in one book, And like, so maybe there's a separate player thing, but all that player information is also with the Game Master book. So mm-hmm. like the Game Master can sit with the book that says both player information and Game Master information. And then the players can have their player book, because usually what happens if the player needs to know something is they're going to ask the Game Master.
Right.
And so then, you know, if the Game Master can't look it up in their book, they're going to probably spend some time being like, okay, where is that in my book? Turns out it's not in my book. Could I see your book?
And yeah. then they have to Let start me see their the player search handbook. That you're asking about, again. Oh, that's a spell. Mm-hmm. Well, that's in your book.
Mm-hmm. I don't have that.
Yeah. Or, you know, maybe I am the one with that, but they should have that, but they're not, because it's a reference book, and reference books sit next to the Game Master.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of information spread between multiple books. It's rough on the ergonomic scale, I would say.
Now,
and spreading the rules between multiple books, rules and systems that interconnect with each other, but being found in different, like a spell that affects certain creature types, but then creature types, that information's over in the Monster Manual.
Yeah. And I think there's, I mean, you know, to some degree that's just like how it has to be. Inter-technology to ease our painful existence.
Right.
Like tools like D&D Beyond is really helpful and makes it much more ergonomic because, well, and then, you know, it depends if you're like, I don't want to pay for the actual
stuff to a pay
subscription
for
D&D Beyond. You kind of get the core rule book. So if it's not in the core rule book, say like maybe it's in Tasha's.
Yeah.
Well, then it becomes a problem. But, you know, the actual virtual interface does make it very ergonomic, because like everything's hyperlinked and you're like, oh, I need to do an attack roll, and like there's a button for that, and it will grab
it, will do
your
it.
Bonuses that you need
from
your character sheet,
and then even your character sheet is not a page that's too small to fit the necessary information. Your character sheet is a web page with the stuff that you need as clickable stuff. That's fantastic ergonomics,
right? Hover over this like underlined term. Ooh, what is poison condition?
Yeah.
Boom. Here's what it is.
Right. And it is hard. You can hyperlink a PDF, but then you're looking at a computer anyway. Mm-hmm. It's hard to write a good book that has that, that has everything, like everything bolded, that has another entry somewhere else in the book with a page number, you know, in parentheses next to it. That would be the ergonomic way to do it. But then you're losing some ergonomics because you're inflating the page count. And, you know, technology solves a lot of ergonomic problems with print media. Unless you're willing to really, like, simplify the whole concept and condense your book into a single thing, like, you know, how Cyborg and Morkborg, how the Borg books put everything in one. In, you know, in a fairly logical order.
Yeah. We haven't messed with it ourselves too much, but if you're like, oh, I would really love a D&D Beyond for something that isn't D&D.
Or I'm working on something, but I would like, you know, the digital interface for it.
Some of our...
You're talking about Obsidian.
Some of our friends have been messing around with Obsidian, and it seems like an incredibly powerful tool. Requires some setup, but... you know, could fill that
It that seems
gap
like
for...
no more setup than setting up a Google Doc with, you know, the correct
organization. Well, I would say it's easier than that, because it knows, from what I've messed around in Obsidian and, you know, experience of somebody else, Brian, setting it up for us, it seems a lot easier than a Google Doc, just because, you know, it knows that you want to use it for, like, that stuff, for quick reference, and be like, oh, I'll click on that, take me to a new page where it explains, you know, whatever rule or map area or whatever.
No, it's still on you to, like, categorize and organize and put the hyperlinks in things. But if a, you know, if a thing has a page and you're writing an entry for a monster and you need it to link to, like, you know, the poison mechanic in your game, Well, then if I assume you do just like hashtag poison and it will prompt you to like, do you want to link to the page that is titled poison effect? And I believe it started as like a college note taking thing, right?
I believe so.
But I think they recognized the utility gaming and the power of being able to like link it up like a wiki essentially. Mm-hmm. And yeah, at some point I mean to mess with it, because it seems like a really great way to present this sort of information. And I wonder if you could lock stuff, like lock the Game Master side of things away from players and then give players the link to their side of it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, stuff like that we like. Here, like single pages for a thing, when these big rule books are usually divided into two columns, or sometimes three, but, you know, then with like images and headers peppered throughout it, sometimes the text spills over. And if you can reduce that to either like each monster gets a single page in your book, but that might not be a good use of book, but you could do it digitally, and that's fantastic, because then you are only looking at the information that you need and clicking on the specific thing.
Yeah, and like that's, that can be hard, like, if you're designing the game, right? Because you want to keep page count down.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can be hard, and, you know, there's where that balance comes in, that we're going to bring everything together at the end of this episode. But, like, it also is, a lot of games do, like, a quick reference chart and stuff. And so, like, you can make those yourself, right? Yeah. Either using Obsidian or, you know, classic analog pen and paper.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you're running a D&D campaign or one shot or whatever, you might say like, okay, I'm gonna make a monster page. So instead of like flipping through the whole monster manual to this monster, I'm just gonna transcribe, you know, do a little prep work.
And that's what I did when I ran D&D, is I took the things that I wanted and then copied the relevant information, you know, sans the images and the extra description stuff, into just a Word document page, and organized that where, like, these are all the bad guys accessible there. But there's also a lack of ergonomics there, because I had to spend my time setting that up to make the provided material useful to me. The quick reference charts thing, the board games do a fantastic job of that. You could argue that those books, while the table of contents is like well organized and follows a clear and usable structure, that the actual pages with the information that you need are sometimes less helpful than they could be, because the necessary information gives way to the art design, to the way they want these things to look, which is sometimes like hostile to use.
Yeah.
But I think they know that. They knew damn well what they were doing, so they put the game's like two pages of how to actually play the game on the inside covers, which is what you're going to be referencing.
Mm-hmm.
And you might look at like, why is, you know, bone D6 damage a whole page in Morkborg? That's fucking stupid. Put all the weapons on one page, right? Don't put it in an 8-page spread. Well, all the weapons are in a little table on the inside cover. Fucking helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew, and they did both things.
Right, they did that balance where they're like, okay, we have some cool art that we want to...
We want to present this in a certain way.
Yeah, for presentation purposes, but also people need to be able to parse it, so we're, you know,
here's the plain text,
have that
version.
Information two places.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of a mechanics thing.
Yeah.
What thing I was going to say about another punch at the bag of D&D.
Well, should we move on to mechanics? Layout,
yeah.
Layout and design. It's a whole fucking degree, like your graphic design and print layout stuff. So, you know, if you're designing for yourself, for your friends, or to, you know, aspiring to publish, there's a lot to learn, and you shouldn't feel bad that it's hard. But yeah, there's tools like Obsidian that make the presentation of these ideas much easier. And then if the thing is good, I would say, you know, take that unstylized wiki that you've made or your plain text document, and then you can start messing with print layout for make it look cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mechanics?
Yeah, let's just hop on our segue. Do you remember? Because we couldn't come up with a better one.
That was a great segue. So much fun to drive. Do they still exist?
I don't think so.
I haven't seen one since, like, Arrested Development went off the air. They must still exist. They were cool. I
mean, somewhere.
But now you have those scooters. Little consumer hoverboard things. Oh. And, yeah, the, like, electric scooters in
Lime
cities.
Scooters.
That little, like, mono wheel hoverboard, that's got to cost like a tenth of what a Segway costs. Probably even less. And now you can just like keep that in your backpack.
Yeah, so mechanics.
Segways.
So mechanics.
Okay. An example of what we would call poor ergonomics in the actual mechanics of how you play the game. Is when to do an action requires multiple tiers of steps to do
and
it.
Referencing.
Yeah, and referencing. The example I was thinking about was the game Forbidden Lands, which in most regards I really like. It's really cool presentation, it's great vibes, and the system itself is very, like, usable, or I would say it makes sense, but it's less usable than it seems on paper. Because every time you do something, you build a D6 dice pool, which can be as many as, like, 12 dice, mm-hmm. depending, because first you check your stat, or your attribute score, right? And then if you can add a skill to it, and it's, like, 4 and 3, or 3 and 4, so there's, like, 12. So, you know, if it falls under a skill that you have, you're adding dice. Special environmental situational things, which now you're talking to the game master, mm-hmm. like, can I get a dice for this? That's coming from, you know, another place, adding dice to your pool. And then you're like weapons and gear, whatever else you've got. You're throwing a spell at it. I don't remember how magic works in that game, actually. But anyway, to do something like sneak or hit with sword, right?
Mm.
It is more complex than, you know, D&D's like, all right, roll a d20.
Mm-hmm.
You might be adding like 3 or 4 things onto that d20 roll, but those are numbers on your character sheet. They should be there, easy for you to see, ergonomically presented. And then you roll one dice. You always know you're rolling a d20. You might not know the target number,
mm-hmm.
but you roll one dice every time, and then you add the relevant stuff to what you're trying to do.
Yeah, and I think this also encompasses what you do in D&D after you roll a dice. So, like, yes, ergonomically rolling one dice is better than figuring out if you roll 4 versus 8 dice, right? I think, well, we think the dice pool thing is pretty cool and, like, mm-hmm. has great uses. The Forbidden Lands just kind of, it's like switching controllers,
yeah.
you know, back in, like, the early 2000s or, mm-hmm. like, you know, keyboard versus
controller.
You want
to try and play Call of Duty on a GameCube? No, that's bad.
Right, or anyways, so, like, you know, rolling one dice, good. But then in D&D, you're like, okay, well, what skill is it? Do I have proficiency? Do I have an item? Do I have a, you know,
yeah.
a second item? And you're looking all over your character sheet, and you're like, oh, well, fuck, now there's a second page of my character sheet. Oh, shit, okay, actually, that roll was at a +5,
yeah.
you know, two turns ago.
Yeah, that was 2 turns ago. Is it worth, like, litigating that it should have mm-hmm. been a different number and possibly have changed what happened previously? Probably not. You missed it, you know?
So, yeah, multiple steps is unergonomic.
Yeah, it's unergonomic, and it, well, okay, it slows things down, and that is not what makes it bad ergonomics. That is a symptom of bad ergonomics. Bad ergonomics will make you feel like you are spending a long time preparing your dice and checking your character sheet and checking your, you know, rules and stuff, as opposed to playing the game, imagining and describing, right, with your friends, and then rolling when you know you need to roll because a thing is uncertain or a thing is an attack or, you know, the things that you know are dice actions.
Right. So, like, good ergonomics is reduced math, not like, oh, multiplication versus addition, but, like, the more you have to add, like, even if it's just plus ones or plus twos, each step to that is a lift, right? You know, could be, you know, oh, I forgot to write that down. We got to check the rule book to see how much, you know, bonus that is or how much debuff that is, whatever. So, yeah, the more steps to get the final number, the less ergonomic.
Yeah. And that applies to, you know, any system, not just like how you make an attack roll. Anything that you have to do as a game master to, like, run your monsters.
Yeah, the game master, also the same thing, right? Ergonomic, like, fixed difficulty where it's like, here's one number, and, like, this number is common and easy to find, whereas, like, oh, well, let me check the monster's AC, and then, oh, you guys are in darkness and cramped quarters or whatever, rough terrain, et cetera, et cetera.
Something I find, like, hugely unergonomic is the way, in, like, Pathfinder and D&D, the monsters and creatures and NPCs, they operate on the same, like, spectrum of stats as the player characters. So not only can you, like, make an insight check in a thing, the game master can be, like, basically as a player now, can be like, you know, this guy's going to make an insight check against you, and I need now to know the relevant number for that.
Right. Not only do I need to know my NPC or monster's value, which requires several additions, but then I need to know your difficulty.
Yeah, and you now need to make a roll to give me that. Like, now we're going to contest your deception versus his insight. And it is... I'm sure it seemed elegant in the design phase back in, like, you know, the 70s, that, like, oh, you could have... This is how you resolve a thing. Difficulty is uncertain, kind of, in this situation. So you could have this character that the game master is running roll against the roll of the player. And that way a bad lie could still work if he turns out to be stupid because he rolls dumb.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it makes sense, too, right? Like, if the player is contesting, then, like, you know, there's the player's skills and stats and equipment, but then also, you know, the randomness of them rolling to see what the actual difficulty number is.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily bad, but it is not ergonomic to do all that math.
Right. Players rolling for everything is something that, you know, we talk a lot about because that is a system that we have gravitated a lot towards.
And it just... What we just talked about, it cuts it in half. It just cuts it. It cuts it in half.
Right? I, as game master, I need to know so many less numbers. I need to know what the difficulty's fixed, right? Mm-hmm. In all the Borg hacks, it's 12 most of the time. It's 12. I need to know a damage value probably, and then, like, if there's any morale or, like, special other thing at play. Then the player rolls for everything. And the player also rolling to defend or to evade or to whatever. Player making defensive rolls instead of game master rolling offensively against player number. Players don't need an armor class. Players don't need, you know, an ability score in D&D is like three different things, right? It's the raw number. And then from that raw number is kind of inexplicably calculated a bonus. Like, we know what the chart says, but nobody knows why those numbers are that for, you know. Why is 9 to 10 0 mm-hmm. or 8 to 10, whatever. I don't remember. But
I think that's...
Why is that 0? Why is that the middle? Mm-hmm. You know, because it's 20, but why
and,
is it 20?
And, you know, there's, yeah, there's balancing math and, like, dice math, which we already talked about, and, like, you know, mm-hmm. you got to do a lot of, you know, is it just algebra?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, statistics.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, well you could design a system that implemented some statistical stuff.
Yeah. Anyways.
But usually that's under the hood. That won't be interacted with on a dice roll.
Mm-hmm.
You use statistics like in the... If you make a random encounter chart, that's some statistics of, you know, if you do like, you know, 50 to 100, not as bad of stuff happens. And then as you approach 1, more mm-hmm. bad stuff happens than... That is some statistics math, I guess. But once it's written down, you're not doing that math.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's all algebra. So reducing the algebraic expression, reducing the variables in the algebraic expression.
Yeah.
That is ergonomic.
And you can still get, like, pretty... Or the GM can still, like, move... Not necessarily move the needle, but, like... You can do some things with fixed difficulty. You can still have contested rolls, and like maybe it's just as simple as we both roll d20s. You get your bonuses. I do not.
Yeah.
You know, do you beat me? Or like I'm gonna roll a d4, and that's gonna increase the difficulty or reduce the difficulty or whatever.
Yeah.
Still keep that like complex random.
You could always insert stuff like that, but that stuff becomes a lot easier the simpler the.
Yeah.
Foundational mm-hmm. system is when the, because the algebraic expression for a Borg hack is, you know, dice does or does not equal 12, essentially. And then there's the second variable of your modifiers. So two variables equal 12 or exceed or fail to, whatever. Is that algebra? That's almost programming. You could express it as algebra. Because if it doesn't equal 12, that's wrong. Failure. There it is.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That's algebra.
That's it. So, two variables, x and y, equal to or greater than 12. That is the whole thing of a Borg hack, mm-hmm. or any board game, right? That's so much easier to layer things onto. You're like, oh, I want to, you know, give this guy advantage, right, on his attacks because, I don't know, he's got the high ground, right?
High ground.
Well, then it's real easy to add that third variable where, like, okay, give me your roll, but reduce it by d4
mm-hmm.
or whatever disadvantage mechanic you've, you know, plugged into the system. Ergonomics.
Right, and so like that, you having a simplified like difficulty allows you to do quick like additions and subtractions.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so like with those quick additions and subtractions, they should. It's easier for them to just be like holistic and like make sense in the moment. It's like, oh, high ground.
Yeah.
So it's going to be harder or, you know, they're going to be easier. They will
have an easier time hitting you.
Thank you. Thank you. I got twisted.
Yeah.
So
intuit that you have a simple mm-hmm. like advantage disadvantage system and then apply that intuitively.
Mm-hmm. And like you don't, there doesn't necessarily need to be a specific rule in the rule book that says that,
yeah.
But it just kind of makes sense.
Or that says, you know, fire Pokemon are weak to water.
Right. And like, because that's a really cool, you know, like monster rock paper scissors thing of like having like resistances and like different types of monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But then it becomes unergonomic when you like make it hyper specific and like everything's got a monster type and then like here are, you know, all the potions that you can do and oils, and we're talking about Witcher 3 now.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh yes,
Witcher 3 is kind of another punching bag on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to be clear, we like, just, like, it has these ancillary mechanics that, like, you almost want to turn down the difficulty so you can ignore them.
Right.
Because so many plants and so many just, like, random bits and bobs that you can collect, and, you know, it would be stupid if there weren't so many recipes for alchemy and crafting that you can engage with, and that's cool, but really, like, I don't like engaging with it, and it only works because a computer is doing that for you.
If it works at all.
Yeah.
but, like, it is...
You would not want to do that out of a big rule.
Yeah.
Right? That would suck.
Because it is really cool to be like, oh, I discovered that the monster is a werewolf, mm-hmm. so I need to go find these plants and brew a... Or, you know, make an oil for my sword.
Right.
That will do extra damage or whatever.
Gotta make my lycanthrope oil.
That's pretty cool.
Yes. Right. Conceptually.
But yeah, doing that out of a rule book.
Is that good mechanics? I would say I don't think that's good mechanics. I think it's cool that you figure that out as part of, like, the role play and the narrative. But then you're like, okay, so we know this. Non-magical attacks against this werewolf aren't going to cut it. We need silver. We need... You know, something. We need something to counter his cursed, you know, hard to killedness. And then, yeah. So the intuitive system idea that we're talking about, the ergonomic version of having a bunch of interactive rock paper scissorsy creature qualities versus like substances and elements and whatever is to just like. Apply advantage if they can, like, if your players can come up with something to negate what would otherwise be, you know.
And have it be intuitive. Where does, like, trolls, like, weakness to fire come from? Is that D&D?
I don't know.
Or did D&D take that from
something? Folklore? Yeah. And that's an interesting thing. And that's why it's hard. We almost called this bullet point common sense systems. But, like, what if you didn't know that? What if you didn't pick up just through your travels in the world?
On this spaceship Earth.
Yeah. What if you never picked up the idea that trolls have, like, regenerative healing, and so they're hard to kill, but fire negates that? That feels like just something I've always known, but that can't possibly be true.
Right, like I don't know where I learned it.
Right. And the only text that I can remember explicitly talking something about trolls is The Hobbit, where they turn to stone in daylight, and that's not even usually applied to trolls in a gaming context. So I don't know where that came from. But if it's in the zeitgeist of what you're playing enough, then, you know, this goes back to the Bushido idea that we were talking about last episode, where, you know, if it's something you can all kind of conceptually agree on, especially if nobody has to say anything for everyone to, like, oh, yep, that's a thing, you know, gotta look out, trolls heal themselves. Trolls heal, and it's hard to kill them.
Right, or, I mean...
Then you put that in play and use one of your simple little tools... like a simple advantage mechanic or disadvantage mechanic to represent that on the tabletop.
Right, like, I mean, another one, I think, a better example, because, like, you know, the trolls might...
I don't know where that came from.
Yeah.
You say your thing, I'm going to do a quick googly and see.
Well, like, getting knocked down.
Yeah.
Being prone in a battle is bad, right? Like, that just makes sense. So, like, saying, oh, enemy is attacking you while you've been knocked on your ass, disadvantage to avoid the attack. That just makes sense. Like, it's hard to argue against that, right? D&D has a specific rule for that, right? But I think we're past that now, and that, like, gets back to the whole, like, Bushido conversation we had of just, like, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't need to be written out. An example of the opposite, where it's like, that's a weird thing. It's like, when you're poisoned condition in D&D, I think it's everything at disadvantage.
Let me look that up real quick. It does look like Trolls Weak to Fire is an old school D&D convention, and it came from there. And it kind of makes sense that they would gamify it that way, because that's more interesting in a fight than waiting until sunrise.
Yeah.
Poisoned condition. Oh, come on. It just took me to all the conditions. okay, a poisoned creature has disadvantage on attack rolls and ability checks.
Yeah. Right, it kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. But also, I would argue that, like, poison could be a damage over time mm-hmm. rather than you're disadvantaged, but, like, you are dying.
Yeah. Right? Or, like, give me a constitution save every round so mm-hmm. that you don't poop your pants. If you poop your pants, you ain't getting a turn. Because, whoopsie, you did that and kind of froze for a second. Yeah. You got Giardia. That was the poisoning that you got. And I guess that's not poisoning. That's a sickness. That's a disease. Mm-hmm. And disease can't be a status effect because there's so many different diseases and they do different stuff. But
right, and that's like why in games, like, disease is a category, but then there's all these sub things. It's like, okay, this disease does this. This disease does that.
Yeah.
So, ergonomically, make things like intuitive to where, like, oh, you're a fire being, if I pour a bucket of water on you, that's probably gonna hurt a lot.
Yeah.
Right? If you're a plant and I throw a torch at you,
you probably don't like that.
You're not gonna like that.
So, intuitive systems ergonomicify hyper specific mini tags that interact differently with each other. Intuit them instead, and, you know, kind of flatten what the result is. It either, you know, it swings one way or the other, good or bad, situationally.
Mm-hmm.
That's an ergonomic version of the Pokemon rock paper scissors thing, or the Witcher, like, many different sorts of crafting possibilities.
Yeah, and so, like, if you use the Bushido code, you can intuitive complex systems with a bunch of hyper-specific, you know, status effects like D&D.
Yeah.
Like, your group doesn't have to know them by heart. You can just be like, okay, well, you know, I know poisoned is something, and I'm just going to say it's disadvantage.
Yeah.
Right, which it is, but only on attack rolls and ability checks. Right. But, like, isn't that everything?
But, well, it doesn't say saves, which are different.
Yep, there it is. I knew I was going to get caught there. Fucking. Anyways.
Also, you don't roll to not get punched in D&D, yeah. So you're not at disadvantage for getting hit.
Right, your armor class is still the same.
Yeah. So, yes, but there are other systems at work that it doesn't talk to, and that can be good, and we'll talk about balance at the end. But yeah, okay, the last kind of major bullet point about the different ways things can or cannot be ergonomic is the part of the game that is player facing.
Yes. What the player uses to play the game.
Yeah.
Right? Mainly character sheets.
Character sheet is really the big thing here. It goes into other stuff, but, like, you know, poor ergonomics. If you format, because there's a button to do it on D&D Beyond to print your character sheet. Mm-hmm. Oops, now you got 4 pages. But when you look at what mm-hmm. a D&D character sheet is, it's like 1 page front and back. And what I think is being clearly communicated by the discrepancy between those things is that 1 page front and back is not enough.
No, you're going to need all the information, a whole deck
especially
of sticky notes.
If you play for years and advance, you know, past level 6, your character sheet's going to get busy,
right? Because you're going to have in D&D, you're going to have like class specific abilities mm-hmm. and like feats come into it, and then, like, yeah, all your equipment bonuses and loot that you've gained over the past whatever, and it becomes a mess.
Yeah.
Right? And it starts out so simple, but then quickly becomes a mess, right? Which is bad ergonomics, because then you're having to do those multiple steps and you're like lifting up sticky notes and be like, what's under this sticky note? And
a like, messy character sheet with lots of scribbles, or like, I filled this out in pen because I didn't think it would change. But then I met this monster and actually it did permanently change one of my ability scores. Oopsie. Or I didn't realize that, like, at certain levels I got to increase my ability scores. Oopsie. Now it's a mess. And then, what, you're going to, like, redraw it every couple of levels? Maybe you are, maybe. And maybe that's fun for you.
Yeah.
But it's not a it's not an ergonomic use of the piece of paper in front of you.
Mm. And that's where balance comes in, right? Because the system has all these specific stuff and all these rules and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it just can't fit on one page.
Right. Right. But there is an argument that it's more economic and better to at least have your spells printed on a couple of pages in front of you rather than, like, hey, can I have my turn with the player handbook?
Mm-hmm.
I need to check this spell before I use it. What's more likely is they're going to fire off a spell and then grind everything to a halt when the game master's like, okay, how's that work? Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't know? It's not my job to know all the spells. You should know your spells.
Right, and then, like, the if you, like, have a special item that does something, like, and you give it, you're like, okay, you looted, you know, the ring of whatever, the ring of macaw, I don't know, and your player's like, okay, great, I got the ring of macaw, and then the game master tells them what they do, and because it's the player's job to write that down, they're not going to write it down. And then they're like, oh, wait a second, I have this ring. What's that do again? I don't remember. You didn't write it down when I gave it to you?
The rule for it? It's not in here in player facing, but good ergonomics is handouts.
Mm-hmm.
Like what you were saying before we started recording. Something we naturally came to was the handing out of little note cards with thing on it.
Right, because the poor version of that is requiring players to record the effect or item or, you know, spell effect, too.
Right.
Right, give them a little handout. Like, the little spell cards that D&D has, like, those are a great ergonomic tool.
Yeah.
Now, are those,
should
like,
you have to pay for it?
Capitalistic, you know, money grabbing?
They're selling you the material that you already paid $50 for again.
Right.
And
like, yeah, you could write those out. You can write them on an index card, but that requires you writing them out on an index card.
Yeah, and is that an efficient use of your time? Maybe. Some people study with flashcards and have no problem spending time making a big stack of them, but it's not how I like to spend my time.
So if you've been listening thus far, you kind of know the direction we're going.
Brian.
Of one page character sheets that actually stay one page.
Yeah.
Right, are the ergonomic ideal.
We haven't gone back to Mothership since we tried it a couple years ago. Basically liked everything about it, but we were doing a different sci-fi thing. I feel like that was serving our needs as far as that went. And, you know, we didn't like everything about the game Mothership, but I love everything about the character sheet because the
great character
sheet. The four different types of character you can be are there. It tells you exactly what numbers to put where and what to roll. And then as you select stats and skills and training and stuff for your character, that's a cool little, like, almost like an electrical diagram, this dope flow chart on one half of the page that just follows to it. And you're like, oh, I want this skill. It shows you with a line what the prerequisite for it is. And it's under a column that says what the bonus for it is. The design of that character sheet is superb ergonomics, because even though the game master has a lot more stuff to deal with, the player doesn't have shit all to look up or remember that isn't printed right there in front of their face. Now, with some folks, that's even a lift to to get them to, well, what does it say? Look at your character sheet. But it's so well designed for, you know, the ergonomics of a player using it to play the game.
Right, and that flows from the, like, mechanics of the game, right? Because, like, I don't think it's possible to do that with D&D. Right?
No.
Like, you cannot have the, like, slick, elegant one-page sheet that never changes just because of the nature of the mechanics.
Yeah, what it
the
is,
mechanics.
There's too many systems interacting with each other, and those systems need to interact for the game that it is to work. And that's fine for what it is. You just, like, you couldn't do something that ergonomic with a more complex system.
Right, so we don't even have to get on the segue for this one, right? Because that's where that balance comes in.
Yeah.
Right, so, like, spent a lot of time talking about, like, good ergonomics and bad ergonomics, right? It's not like, oh, game systems that allow for a perfectly ergonomic one-page character sheet, that's the best.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. We're saying it's good and we like it.
Because then it would just be like no one would play anything except Lasers and Feelings. And that's not that good of a game.
Mm-hmm.
It's super ergonomic. A whole thing is on a single page in a pretty kick-ass way, ergonomically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a game that, like, doesn't
it's
really...
It's not very complex.
Yeah. It doesn't allow for... very interesting or complex manifestations of your imagination. And the thing that we found when we played it is having a binary, like, everything is one or the other. Every action that you take, every attack that you make, every defensive roll is either lasers or feelings. It is so easy to be like, well, but for my character, this could be more of a feelings thing. And then the whole thing falls apart. And it falls apart because it lacks balance in its systems, balance of ergonomics and systems. And I hope this has come across in the episode up until this point. We are extolling, you know, the virtues of ergonomics in pen and paper game design. But ergonomics on their own aren't virtuous. They're not, like, the right way to do things. And it's totally cool and sometimes necessary and completely fine to sacrifice ergonomic convenience for the sake of, you know, a system that works, even if it takes a second sometimes to, like, hang on, what number do I roll? And longtime D&D veterans probably, you know, listen to this and like, yeah, I know it now. So what on the face of it to a new player presents as a lack of accessibility, well, once you're not new...
Right, once you get that practice and that muscle memory...
You know what to reach for. You know what number you need for everything. And that initial lack of ergonomics, you move past when you build that muscle memory. And that's great. That's okay. But... We're talking mostly about, like, how stuff is designed. And I think I would just, like, urge anyone who is trying to design their own thing to keep ergonomics, you know, in the back of their brain. Like, see if you can fit it all on one page. And you probably can't, right? But you'll see what needs to be its own thing. You'll be like, okay, this is the inside cover. What you could fit on one page, that's the inside cover. That's the important stuff. But I need lists of this, you know. I need a specific explanation of this mechanic. And now you know, what does need a full paragraph or a full page or a spread or whatever. And then you'll be on the right road towards something that's ergonomic in a way that people can use.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing, and, like, hopefully if you take one thing from this episode, having ergonomics in mind, so it's like, oh, I really like this cool, like, hyper-specific thing, but, you know, it doesn't really fit in to, like, the rest of it. And, like, having this one exception to, like, the general rule where it's, like, it's not going to come into play 90% mm-hmm. of the time, you know, maybe you maybe have okay. that balance of, like, okay, well, I really like it. It's really cool. So it's not going to be ergonomic, but it's really cool.
It's going to be there. Fantastic. And maybe that becomes the thing that, like, sets your mm-hmm. game apart.
Yeah.
Is, you know, the dungeon crawling and the monster fighting is pretty regular, but this specific system that I've designed for, like, downtime and mm-hmm. revelry in between dungeons, that's not going to fit on the inside cover. But that's the cool part of it, is, like, you know, you do a dungeon, you come back, and how do you spend... It's, like, half of the game.
Right.
Becomes its unique selling point
mm.
when it doesn't easily fit into the, you know, the simple rules reference.
Yeah. So, like, making the intentional decision of, oh, this is really cool and I'm going to sacrifice ergonomics for this because it is really cool. Versus, oh, well, like, you know, because I did this one really cool thing, I have to come up with a balance, and then, like, you know, you end up with, like, 10 more things, and then it's a mess.
Yeah.
And you're like, where did I go wrong? It's because you didn't, you know, really think it through and be like, is it worth sacrificing ergonomics for
or this? Can this, you know, can this very complicated system be reduced to a sort of, like, catch-all formula that applies situationally and then doesn't require the comprehensive lists of this beats that or this affects this in such way. Yeah. Ergonomics. Most of the games we really like are on the ergonomics side, but that doesn't mean they're the best ones. Or that more comprehensive, robust, longer page count games are bad.
Yeah.
You could clip that. You could clip me saying longer page count games are bad.
Clip it.
Out of there, and then, you know.
YouTube Shorts, let's go.
YouTube Shorts, that. Get it, you know, get me all out of context there. Anywho's. Think that's going to do it for this episode of Two-Headed Game Master. As always, if you like our stuff, head on over to 2hgm.com, where you will find a link to our Patreon, which will soon be the only thing of ours extant on the internet.
Restructuring.
Yeah, we're gonna ditch the website as soon as that money expires, basically. Nobody goes to it. Nobody uses it. We don't maintain it.
True.
So we'll put it on the Patreon, which is a lot more like just running a Facebook page, and we'll put our cool stuff there.
Yeah.
And we'll make a free tier. Or we might just be going completely free.
Yeah, I believe that's the direction I would like to go. Mm. So find us on Patreon for all the things.
Just check out our Patreon, and we'll put, like, a tip jar on it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. If you want to give us a dollar. But you don't have to. If you want to just hang out, come hang out. Join us next time for another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. As always, thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pontillo's Finest as the intro and outro to our show. And we'll see y'all on the next one.
And on the next one.